Welcome back. I apologize that the type on the paper is a little small. I got a little carried away with my sources, and I had to fit it on one paper. But we're back to Mishlei. Back to Mishlei's Perek Gimel, the third chapter. And you'll notice a couple interesting concepts. We've touched upon a couple of them before. But as we said last class, the third Perek really transitions us from more of psychology into more of religiosity. And what I mean by that is if you remember, the first parak was a lot about, the first couple of parakim were all about the benefits of learning the knowledge of Hashem, the knowledge of the Torah, how it's going to help you in difficult situations or with difficult influences and things like that. The third parak, as we noted the last time, 100 years ago, was all about really using that knowledge in order to be better in terms of your actual avodas Hashem, in terms of your religiosity. So it picks up on that theme here, but as you'll see, I've connected it to some things in psychology anyways. Okay, bitach el Hashem b'chol libecha. Bitachon means not just a little bit or sometimes, it means all of your heart. Bitach el Hashem b'chol libecha, with all of your heart. What's interesting about that is really the next phrase, which is coming to supplement the same concept, which is v'el binascha al tisha'in, and to your understanding, into your bina, into your comprehension, do not depend. Don't rely on your own knowledge. Why is that interesting? Because we just spent two chapters talking all about the benefits of knowledge, and all of a sudden Shlomo is saying, but you know that shouldn't be really what you depend on. You can only really depend on Hashem. So first of all, it's interesting. This is a pasuk which is quoted in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. I mentioned a couple times ago that the third parak has a lot of well-known phrases in it. So this is one of those situations where it makes it into ethics of our fathers in the Pirkei Avos. Reb Nehorai Omer, have a gola l'makom Torah. What does the word gola mean?
To be exiled.
To be exiled. Exile yourself to a place of Torah. That's interesting because usually galus is a negative. Here it's saying exile yourself from wherever you are. Maybe you're stuck at home. Maybe you're in a small community that doesn't have any Torah. Go to a place that has Torah. V'al tomar shehi tabo acharecha. And don't delude yourself into thinking that the Torah will follow you wherever you go. Now, Shlomo Melech didn't know about why you Torah. When he wrote this book, he didn't know about all the technological advances that would allow you to learn Torah even when you're not in a specific spot. Whether or not he would change his tune is based on the next part. That your friends will establish it in your hand. We'll see in a second what that means. And why does it say that? Why does it say make sure you go to a place of Torah and your friends aren't going to help you out? Because v'el binascha al tishayin. Just because you think you can learn doesn't mean that you don't need anybody else. So what does that mean? If you look at the Bar Tanur, you look at not the wine, but the commentary, Rev Ovachim Bar Tanur explains the following. Shechavirecha yikaimu biyadacha, v'al tismoch shechavercha shiavo mibeis harav yikaimu hator biyadacha. What does this mean? This means that your colleagues, your even rabbinic, studious friends are going to come back from Shir and they'll tell you all about it. So says Rev Nehorai, don't depend on your own thought or even on your friend's thought in order to establish what was said in Shir that day. Right? They say, oh, I won't go to Shir. Shoshana always comes. She'll fill me in. I'm not going to go hear the drasha. Steve's always there. He'll fill me in. Says Rabbi Nehorai, that's not true. Have a goal elamakum Torah. Leave your spot wherever you are. It's not as good as the base measure. It's not as good as going to shul and hearing the shir yourself. Pick yourself up, get out of the house, and go to the place where the rabbi is. Because it's never the same when you hear something secondhand than when you hear it firsthand. I can't tell you how often that's, you know, how true that is. We don't have to look even in religious context for that. We can look in secular contexts, you know, how many times an article puts its own spin or its own flavor or its own hue to a certain subject based on their own what they hear or what they want to hear or how they want to interpret something, the second person, the second hand knowledge is always a step removed, not only in terms of the fact you're not hearing from the source, but also with the actual information. The information is going to be different naturally. Yavdana.
Isn't that what happened with Chava?
So that's interesting. That's one of the takes. I mentioned that briefly in passing in my first drush on Sukkos, which is that you mean Adam telling her about the Isser, yeah. So Adam, in what could be understood as a positive move, what he thought was a positive move, added to the Isser, but actually ended up hurting Chava and himself in the end. That's an interesting correlation, because Adam is the one that told Chava, according to some, about the fact that Hashem said not to eat from the tree, and when he gave it over, he said also don't touch the tree. Although, as I said on Sukkot, there are different ways of understanding it. That could be a good example of secondhand knowledge hurting you in the end. But Perish Acher, says Rav Avajmi Bar Tanura, and I think this is even a more interesting one. Perish Acher, Shechaverecha Yekaimu Bidecha Amibnei Ma Ani Omer Lecha Havigol Makam Torah. Why do I tell you, go to the base measures, go to the study hall? Not because you think that your friends are going to come home from the shir and then tell you the shir, but when you go to the Beis Medrash, your friends will help you learn. Not that they'll come back later and tell you, but that they can help you. Even if you're really smart, even if you're very, very sharp, you're not going to be able to figure out the Torah all by yourself. Only once you have a back and forth, a conversation in Torah, where you say something, somebody else says something else, and you work off of each other. That's what it means. Don't rely on your own wisdom. Meaning you're going to say to your friends, I don't have to go to the Beis Medrash. I know how to open up a Shulchan Aruch. I know how to look on Safari online and get the translation of the words and the Talmud, whatever. I don't need anybody else. So says Rav Avraham Jar Tanura, that's what the pasuk means. V'al binascha al tishayin, don't rely on your own knowledge. Don't rely on the fact that you think you can understand things by yourself. They say that when Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish used to learn, does anyone know the story in Bava Metzia about Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish?
Yeah, he was a bandit.
Yeah, he was a bandit, and then he stole Rabbi Yochanan's clothing. What ended up marrying his sister, because Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, if you give me my clothes back, I'll let you marry my sister. No, but he says, if you learn with me, then you can have my sister as a wife. And that's what happens, and they learn with each other, and one thing leads to another, and ultimately Rabbi Yochanan says something which has negative connotations of Rish Lakish's previous thievery, and Rish Lakish gets all upset. He ends up passing away, and they try to replace Rish Lakish with somebody else who can be a charus of Rabbi Yochanan. Everybody likes to talk about the story at the beginning and the story at the end. Rabbi Yochanan tried to revive Rish Lakish, and it didn't work. And then Rabbi Yochanan ended up dying because he couldn't live without Rish Lakish. And in contrast to his story about his own children who passed away, that he could get through, but he couldn't get through with the story of Rish Lakish, fine. But what people oftentimes don't remember is what happens in the middle. What happens in the middle is that Rabbi Yochanan looks for another chavrusa. And they give him another chavrusa. The sharpest guy in the Beis Medrash. The smartest guy. And they give it to Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan says something, and the guy gives him all the proofs in the world that proves Rabbi Yochanan's right. And they keep learning, and every single time Rabbi Yochanan says anything, the guy says, yeah, you're right. Look over here, look over there. It must be that you're right. And Rabbi Yochanan says, this is terrible. This is not a chavrusa. I need Rish Lakish back. When I would say something, Rish Lakish would ask me 24 questions, attacking what I said, making me clarify my answers. And that's what he is saying, that you can't, even Rabbi Yochanan needed someone who wasn't just going to say, yes, you're right. He needed someone that would go back and forth with him, that would argue with him, and hopefully through that arguing, through that back and forth, they would be able to come to a better understanding of the truth. And this concept of El Binas Chal Tishayin, that you can never be too confident in your own knowledge, is something that obviously comes up a lot in our own lives, and it's something which I believe, although I couldn't necessarily find an explicit modern day source for it, I believe is getting even more and more difficult with the concept of looking for information online and the ideas of not needing a handyman because you can look it up on YouTube and things like that. And there is worth to that depending on the situation, but each person has to know for themselves that they can't be too confident ever, and especially when it comes to learning. Just an interesting little snippet of information based on that. So I found this article on Psychology Today, which is a wonderful website. In some way, it depends which article you're looking at, but overconfidence is the mother of all psychological biases. I mean that in two ways. First, overconfidence is one of the largest and most ubiquitous of the many biases to which human judgment is vulnerable. For example, 93% of American drivers claim to be better than the median. It doesn't mean the median in the middle of the road, it means 50%. They think they're above average drivers, 93%, which is obviously impossible, right? That's 43% more than it should be. Another way in which people can indicate their confidence about something is providing a 90% confidence interval around some estimate. When they do so, the truth often falls inside their confidence intervals less than 50% of the time, suggesting that they did not deserve to be 90% confident of their accuracy. Right? So they think they're really sure, and really, oftentimes, they're much less than 50% true. In his 2011 book, which I quoted on Shabbos, not on purpose that I'm bringing it in today, just happens to be that way, Thinking Fast and Slow, Daniel Kahneman called overconfidence the most significant of the cognitive biases. And it's definitely something we can all relate to. Among many other things, overconfidence has been blamed for the sinking of the Titanic, the nuclear accident in Chernobyl, the loss of Space Shuttle Challenger in Colombia, the subprime mortgage crisis of 2008, and the Great Recession that followed it, and the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Overconfidence may contribute to excessive rates of trading in the stock market, high rates of entrepreneurial failure, legal disputes, political partnership, and even war. So overconfidence is a real big problem. And one of the best anecdotes, antidotes to fixing overconfidence is making sure you have other people around you. And that's what Rabbi Nehorai is saying. Albinascha tishani means make sure you got friends with you. Make sure you have colleagues. Make sure you have people you can bounce ideas off of. Yes,
Dean? Part of all of these was groupthink. They thought someone warned them, each one, but the group said, no, it can't be this.
Right, they were too confident in their own ideas. They weren't willing to listen to anybody else. And actually, Rashi says that on this pasuk, that one of the concepts of Elbinas Chalati Shain is that you're not willing to listen to Chochacha, to rebuke. You just want to keep doing what you're doing. The question, however, is, what does that have to do with the first part of the pasuk? B'tacha Hashem b'chol libecha, believe in Hashem with all of your heart, v'Elbinas Chalati Shain, and don't depend on your own knowledge. So on the one hand, it means that you don't know enough, you always have to listen to Hashem. But it's not really talking about the exact same thing. Bitach Hashem means have bitach and I thought something's going to go right. V'albinascha tishayin means that you can never be too right yourself. So the truth is that the two things are connected, because v'albinascha tishayin means also on a moral level. That you might think something is morally right, but the truth is that Hashem says otherwise. And if you look in Tehillim Kuf Chav Zayin, so the pasuk tells us Shlomo Amach. Also Shlomo Amach says Shem Alos LeShlomo Im Hashem Lo Yivne Bayis Shav Amlu Vonav Bo. Rabbeinu Yonah actually quotes this pasuk in order to bring home this point. He says, if Hashem's not going to build a house, so then its purpose there's no purpose in somebody else building it. Meaning, Albinascha Tishayin doesn't just mean your own thoughts might be misleading, but also your own confidence in your skills. You might think you're a master carpenter. You might think you're a master builder. And you're going to build something beautiful. But if Hashem doesn't want it to be built, it's not going to work out. And the different Mefarshim talk about this, especially in regards to Shlomo HaMelech, that this is referring to the Beis HaMikdash. That it's true, on the one hand, human beings were able to build the Beis HaMikdash, but on the other hand, Hashem ultimately destroys it when he thinks it's no longer time for it to be standing anymore. And that's what I think, who did I see it quoted from? The Al-Sheikh. The Al-Sheikh HaKodah says, Hashem lo yivne bayis, if Hashem's not the one to build it himself, and we have the greatest supporter of this concept walking in right now, Michael. If Hashem is not going to build the Beis HaMikdash by himself, if he's not going to bring the Beis HaMikdash from the sky and put it down in Yerushalayim, so then it's pointless for us to start building it. I know Michael loves that concept, so I just wanted to...
That's the opposite.
I know. So that's what the Al-Sheikh says instead in terms of that. What's the next pasuk? We go back to source number one, a very well-known pasuk also. V'chol d'rachecha da'ehu. In all of your ways, you shall know him or them. I think it's him. V'hu yiyasher or chosecha. Anyone familiar with the word yiyasher? Probably not. Like yashar. But yasher means you should go straight. Not yashar means straight. Yiyasher means go straight. Right? So when an Israeli tells you yashar, 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 that's just talking about the place. But what he really means is yasher, 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 go straight, go straight, go straight. But it's also the word that we use for shkayach. What is shkayach? Yasher kochacha. Yasher means you should continue with your strength. Keep going with your strength. Someone gets an aliyah, they say a bracha, they have the schus to be motzi the entire kehila. Yasher koach. You should continue in that strength that you have the strength to lead the people. So that's when you do yasher ochosecha. If you think of Hashem, you have Hashem in your mind when you're doing all your ways, v'chol derechecha te'ehu, hu yasher ochosecha, then Hashem is going to help you out. This pasuk is perhaps, I would say, and this is probably too radical of a formulation, but this pasuk is perhaps one of the greatest, I guess, flagship psukim of modern Orthodoxy. And I say that obviously with a little bit of liberty, not such a literal statement, but the Rambam tells us the following. Hamanhig atzmo alidei alpi refua, im sam alibo shie kol guku veverv shleme bovad, v'sheyu lo banim osen mo'achto v'amein l'tarko, ein zo derech tova. Someone wants to be healthy so that they feel good, and that they want to have children so that the children can do his work. That's not good. Ella, rather, yasim alibo sheyehe gufo shalim v'chazik kidei shetia nafsha yishar l'dasas Hashem. Why should you want to be healthy? In order to know more about Hashem. When you're healthy, you're able to do the activities you're supposed to be doing better. It's not possible to understand the world around us or to comprehend the wisdom of Hashem's world. And you're hungry and you're sick. Or one of your limbs is hurting you. V'yasim, and similarly, yasim alibo shielo lo ben ulay yechacham v'gadol b'Yisrael. When you have a child, you shouldn't think, oh, I want this child to just take over my business. You should want this child to be an Oved Hashem. You should want this child to be one of the chachamim. You should want him to grow in Torah learning. Nimsa, and therefore you'll find, ha-mahalich b'derech zu kol yamav, Oved es Hashem tamid. Someone who follows this path is always going to be serving Hashem. Afil b'sha shenosev inosein, even when they're in business. Va'afilu b'shah sheboel, even when they're having relations. B'ibnei machshavto b'chol kidei sheyimatzei tzirachav ashi guf hoshon l'avodas Hashem. Everything in life is in order to make sure that you're doing things for Hashem and for the way Hashem wants you to live. Va'afilu b'shah shu yashin, even when you're sleeping. Im yashin l'das kidei shetenuach datu alav v'yenuach gufo kidei shelo yechlev l'ucha l'avodas Hashem v'uchole nimsi shena shelo avodol makom baruch hu. Even your sleep, when you have in mind that it's going to help you, Mirtz Hashem, the next day to daven shachris better, to learn Torah better, to treat your family members better, to treat your coworkers better. If that's your intention when you go to sleep, not just because you really like sleeping, but because you're trying to live better, so then that is also considered avodas Hashem. V'yal inyan zed tzivu chachamim v'amru, v'chol ma'asach yil shei shmai. Everything you do, whether you get up and you work, whether you get up and you learn, whether you get up and you dab, whatever it is, you should always be doing l'shem shmai. V'hu sham or shlomo v'chachma. So that's what Shlomo HaMelech means when he says in Mishlei, Perek Gimel, Daf Vav, Pasuk Vav, v'chol d'rachecha da'eyu v'hu yiyasher orchosecha, that if in all of your ways you keep Hashem in mind, so that Hashem will make sure that your paths are going to be straight too. That you are going to go in a successful path when you have Hashem in mind. Yeah, Michael.
Rambam seemingly makes this very clear in another context of the non-Jew who follows the seven mitzvahs very north because of his chachma and not because of his...
Of Hashem.
He does exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
He's not a tzaddik anymore. He's,
right. He talks about in Hilchos Avodah Zarah what it means to be an Oved of Zarah, what it means to be doing the Shabbos Shalom.
So is he saying even a Jew who does a mitzvah, I have to...
I don't think that's the same. I don't think that's the same. The Jew has a certain...
just the action.
Yeah. Lo mebakeach shechar kol birya. we would get some schar just for doing a mitzvah.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure, though. I would have to look at that Rambam again. So I think I've mentioned this before, one time when I was trying out for the shul, and perhaps one time in passing in this class also, the parable of the three bricklayers. Mm-hmm. Right? The three bricklayers in the book called, I know it from a book called Grit by Angela Duckworth. She says the following, and this is, I think, is connected to the fact that whatever we're doing in life can always be purposeful, especially when it comes to thinking of Avodas Hashem when we're doing them. Fortunate indeed are those who have top-level goals so consequential to the world that imbues everything they do, no matter how small or tedious, with significance. Consider the parable of the bricklayers. Three bricklayers are asked, "What are you doing?" The first says, "I'm laying bricks." The second says, "I'm building a church." And the third says, "I'm building the house of God." The first bricklayer has a job. The second has a career. But the third has a calling. Many of us would like to be like the third bricklayer, but instead identify with the first or second. I found that only a minority of workers consider their occupations a calling. Not surprisingly, those who do so are significantly grittier, which is a positive thing, than those who feel that that job or career more aptly describes the work. Those fortunate people who do see their work as a calling, as opposed to a job or a career, reliably say, "My work makes the world a better place." And it's these people who seem most satisfied with their jobs and their lives overall. In one study, adults who felt their work was a calling missed at least a third fewer days of work than those with a job or a career. It's a lot easier to say, "Oh, I'm sick, I don't want to go to work," if you don't really feel the purpose of your work, if you don't feel that you're on a mission. I just had the opportunity to wish congratulations to Elaine Kahn. Elaine Kahn tonight, about an hour ago, was given an award for Employee of the Year. Employee of the Year at Kadima, which is a very special organization that helps people with mental challenges. And she spoke about how she loves her work, and she'll accept the award, but with humility, because this is really what she loves doing. And that's really what Grit is talking about, and that's what the Rambam is talking about. No matter what we're doing in life, whether it's our job, whether it's our food, whether it's our sleep, whatever it is, can always be made purposeful when you see it in the context of Hashem. And oftentimes people don't necessarily just pause to think about the purpose of their work, and they just think, "Oh, I'm just crunching numbers all day." Or they think, "Oh, I'm just working in a supermarket all day. I'm just, you know, talking to clients all day." But the truth is, if you can pause for a moment, before you go to work, while you're at work, whatever it is, and say, "What am I doing that's contributing to a better world of Hashem?" So then you can actually create much more purposeful satisfaction in yourself, in your work. You don't feel as guilt-ridden, you don't feel as bored, you don't feel as tired and exhausted at the end of work, because you feel like you're doing something for Hashem. And I remember, I think I said this once, that in Kansas I had this non-religious Christian who was trying to become more religious in some way, somehow got my email, somehow we ended up meeting for coffee at Starbucks, and this was her main complaint. She went to a church and she said to the whoever, she said, what am I doing that's purposeful for the life that I'm supposed to lead? I'm just a cashier at a grocery store. And the whoever it was, pastor or whatever, said to her, "Yeah, you're right. There are some things that are holy and some things that are not holy." Oh, and I said to her, "That's not true. Because every time that you give food to someone, whether it's a mother, whether it's a child, whether it's an elderly person, what you're doing is making sure that they have something to live with. You're creating a satisfaction for people, and hopefully the way that you do it will make them feel good about it. If they don't have enough money, if they do whatever it is, things come up that you can make it so that it's your job to sustain people." And that's a very noble occupation. And that's what Angela Duckworth is talking about, and that's what the Rambam is talking about more significantly. Interestingly enough, there is a Gemara in Brachos that takes this a little bit even more to an extreme. Darash bar kapara, ezehu parsha ketan shekol gufei Torah tuluyim ba. Give me a pasuk, says Bar Kapara, give me a pasuk that's all inclusive of everything in the Torah. V'hu yasher, and the pasuk is the one that we're talking about here. B'chol derechecha de'ehu v'hu yasher arachosecha. In everything you do, just make sure you're doing it with Hashem in mind, and then Hashem is going to make it successful. Amar Rava, This is a fascinating statement and probably very difficult for some people to understand. Afilu l'dvar avera. Even when it comes to sinning, b'chol derechacha de'ehu, you still have to keep Hashem in mind. Or one should keep Hashem in mind. What does this mean? So it can be, I've heard it cut in a few different ways. On the one hand, it means that when you're doing something bad, at least feel bad about it. Right? Feel shame. Have Hashem in mind. Okay, you're going to do something wrong. You shouldn't do it. But when you do it, it's a second level transgression if you're not going to think that I shouldn't have done that. If you're not going to think, oh, I shouldn't, Hashem doesn't care. Right? If you're going to think things like that, so then that's also transgressing b'chol derechacha de'ehu. Even when you're a gazlan. There's a Shlomo Karlbach song. Have I quoted Shlomo Karlbach yet in this class?
No.
I should have if I haven't. There are parts of his life that are complicated and parts of his life that we can learn from. But Shlomo Karlbach has a story that he says about, I think it was, I don't know if it was the Baal Shem Tov or not. It was some Hasidic Rebbe who used to be the Rebbe for thieves. The Rebbe for thieves. Mm-hmm. Anyone know the story? He talks about how there was one thief that used to come around anytime he got in trouble, anytime the cops were on his tail. And he would always come to the Rebbe. The Rebbe would give him a bracha. And then the Rebbe passed away, and the guy came to the Rebbe's son. And the son's like, what are you talking about? I'm not giving you a bracha? That's ridiculous. Whatever. So I think the story ends. I haven't listened to it in years. But I think the story ends that the son hears from his father or from the Baal Shem Tov or something, that there are plenty of Rebbes for tzaddikim. We need Rebbes for people that make mistakes. We need people that are able to reach down and help the people that are making mistakes. What exactly is Rava referring to when he says, afilu l'dvar vera? I'm not really sure. I heard another interpretation which says that even gazlanim daven t'Hashem. Right? Even a gazlan says, Hashem, please make sure I don't get caught. There's a dissonance, obviously. There's a disconnect between what they're doing and what they're thinking. But at least they have a concept of God. They have a concept of who runs the world.
So the whole statement about V'yohafel Recha Kamacha is the whole Torah and everything else is commentary.
So first of all, it's very interesting what exactly that Gemara means.
Okay.
It could very well be. It's referring, the Marashat says over there, that it's referring to Lotases. And that's what it means. It's all-inclusive of all the prohibitions of the Torah. And if you look at Rashi over there, so Rashi says that pasuk means if you have to l'reicha is not your friend next door, it's Hashem. Your reicha is Hashem. Not a chassidish shavart. That the Rashi on the Gemara says, if you have to l'reicha kamocha, love Hashem like you love yourself. So that's a heavy dose of chassidus from 11th century worms, but that's what Rashi says. Either way, the chiddush, but it's a good point also. And there are other midrashim that also ask what's the most inclusive, most important pasuk in the Torah, and it doesn't say those either of these other ones. But either way, so the Maharsha actually says shekol gufei haTorah tulim bo shenamar b'chol derechach da'ehu lo kamar zachrehu. It doesn't say think of Hashem, ela da'ehu, know Hashem. And this is really this is the Rambam's wheelhouse right here, that you have to know what Hashem says. Different pasuk zachrehu ela da'ehu. Yediyah amitis b'metziuso. You have to know what Hashem wants. You have to mamish know what Hashem wants. V'shehu yachlo mashkia b'chol derechacha, and that Hashem is aware of everything that you're doing. L'aseis chartova tzadikim, to give reward to the tzadikim. L'anosh v'shaim u'mesayim b'hu yasher yarchosecha al das she'amru b'derech she'adam rotze lelech. In the way that a person wants to go, the Gemara tells us ma'olich anoso. Hashem's going to go. Hashem's going to help you go. If you try, if you start out a little bit, Hashem's going to help you there. We similarly say, Habalatar Messiahinoso. Someone who wants to become purified, Hashem's going to be there to help you finish the job. He's not going to let you hanging and allow you to try to do it by yourself. He's going to help you out. Over the page, we continue. The Pasuk tells us from Shlomo Melech, Al Tichacham Beinecha Yiras Hashem V'sor Meira. Don't think you're so wise in your own eyes. Right? This is similar to what we said before. Never think you're so smart. V'sor Meira. And refrain yourself from evil. So this presumably is a 1-2 punch, meaning that these aren't two separate statements, but rather when you know you're not too smart, when you have the humility to know you don't know something, that's when it's going to be sor meira. That's when you'll stay away from bad stuff. If you have the humility to understand that maybe you don't know everything, you'll ask questions, you'll ask shilas to the rabbi, you'll always be seeking more information. As long as you think you know everything, so then you're going to run into trouble. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that this presumably is coming from Shlomo's own experience. Why is it that the Torah doesn't tell us the reason for the mitzvahs explicitly? There are some instances where it tells us part of the mitzvahs, whatever. Because there are two psukim that tell us why we have a mitzvah, and the greatest of all men, Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, Shlomo HaMelech, was still failed at them. Ksiv, the pasuk tells us in Devarim, Lo yar belo nashim, you shouldn't have too many wives. Amar Shlomo, ani arbe velo asur, I'm going to have a lot of wives, and it's not going to be a problem for me. I know myself. I know it's not going to sway me in any bad directions. And it didn't work. That the women, all the wives that he had, did distract him, and it did veer him off the path. I saw in the Art Scroll Mishlei a fascinating footnote, and before I read the footnote, I saw who it was from. It was from the Kutzker Rebbe. I said, "The Kutzker Rebbe, what could the Kutzker Rebbe possibly have in a different nuance of this verse?" And the truth is, it's a beautiful, beautiful way to understand the pasuk. And this is just me typing out the Art Scroll footnote. Do not make judgments based merely on what you see. First impressions can be misleading. Analyze and consider. Where is the Kutzker Rebbe getting this from? When we understood the pasuk, we said, "Al tiyichacham be'enecha." Don't think you're so great in your own eyes. Says the Kutzker Rebbe, it means mamish, your eyes. Don't think with your eyes. When you see something with your eyes, don't think that that's all there is to understand. Don't look at something and say, "Oh, now I get it." There's always something beyond what you're looking at. You can use it to down the kaf's chus, to have the benefit of the doubt about somebody. But even more so, there are always other things that are leading to your understanding of what you see. And when I saw this Kutzker Rebbe, this footnote in the Art Scroll, so it reminded me of a person I once talked about in a shir a few years ago. His name was Isaac Lidsky. Anyone know Isaac Lidsky is? Isaac Lidsky has a fascinating story. He happens to have been, I don't know if people will date themselves or not with this one, but he happens to have been a child actor on a TV show called Saved by the Bell. People familiar with Saved by the Bell? So Saved by the Bell had a sequel called Saved by the Bell, like New Class or something like, and he was one of the main characters in the Saved by the Bell sequel series. And as it turns out, while he was on the show, he started developing a vision impairment. And he slowly but surely has one of these very rare diseases where slowly but surely he lost his eyesight just naturally. Both of his parents had a recessive gene, and none of them in the family ever had it. But it just happens to be that they linked up these two recessive genes and caused him to have this eye impairment. I think he said the ages 15 to 24, he slowly but surely lost all of his eyesight. And he has a book called Eyes Wide Open. I've never read the book, so I can't tell you, but I've listened to his TED Talk, and it's very interesting. So in the TED Talk, this is just a couple snippets from the TED Talk, he says like this: "What does it feel like to see? You open your eyes, and there's the world. Seeing is believing. Sight is truth, right? Well, that's what I thought. Then from age 12 to 25, my sight became increasingly bizarre carnival, funhouse hall of mirrors and illusions. Objects appeared, morphed, and disappeared in my reality. It was difficult and exhausting to see. I pieced together fragmented and transitory images until I saw nothing at all. I learned that what we see is not universal truth. It is not objective reality. What we see is a unique, personal, virtual reality that is masterfully constructed by our brain. Let me explain with a bit of amateur neuroscience. Your visual cortex takes up 30% of your brain. That's compared to approximately 8% for touch and 2 to 3% for hearing. Sight is 1/3 of your brain by volume and can claim about 2/3 of your brain's processing resources. It's no surprise then that the illusion of sight is so compelling. Well, make no mistake about it, sight is an illusion. A hill appears steeper if you've just exercised, and a landmark appears farther away if you're wearing a heavy backpack. You create your own reality, and you believe it. I believed mine until it broke apart. The deterioration of my eyes shattered the illusion. Which is why he calls the books Eyes Wide Open, because once he became blind, he realized how he misunderstood so many things in the world. You see, sight is just one way we shape our reality. We create our own realities in many other ways. Let's take fear as just one example. Your fears distort your reality. Psychologists have a great term for it, awfulizing. I didn't know about the term until I heard it from him. I don't know. Fear replaces the unknown with the awful. When I was diagnosed with my blinding disease, I knew blindness was a death sentence for my independence. It was the end of achievement for me. Blindness meant I would live an unremarkable life, small and sad and likely alone. I knew it. This was a fiction born of my fears, but I believed it. If I had not confronted the reality of my fear, I would have lived it. I'm certain of that. And you know what he did after he became blind? He graduated with, a master's in mathematics from Harvard. He owns his own construction company in Florida, and he's married with 4 kids, and he's entirely blind. And it's a beautiful, beautiful story, and he has this wonderful TED Talk, which is, the TED Talk is much more comprehensive, much more thorough than this, and he speaks very well, very clearly, and it's very interesting. He actually says, which I think the first time I listened to it, I didn't listen to the follow-up interview. There's a follow-up interview to his TED Talk where a guy comes out and asks him, you know, you're the CEO of a construction business. Are there any complications with the fact that you can't see anything? So he says, you know, interestingly enough, I believe it actually helps the business. In what way? He says, at our board meetings, I can't see anybody's facial expressions. If someone has a feeling, they have to make it known. If someone's thinking about something, they have to express it, because there's no other way I'm going to figure it out. And he says, because of that, the communication on his team is much more thorough and it's much deeper. Which I thought was a very interesting concept, that we, by our vision, by our what we can see on other people's faces, crutch ourselves into thinking we know what they're thinking. And because of that, we refrain from telling what we truly believe, or we refrain from asking follow-up questions to ask what people are feeling about certain things. So that's what he said. And it's to me, that's also indicative of what the Kutzker Rebbe was saying. Don't think with your eyes that you're so smart. Don't think that what you're seeing is really reality, because it's truly a construct of your preconceived notions, which is informing what you're seeing. It's very interesting stuff.
Wasn't Judge Bernstein the honor?
Yeah, Judge Bernstein last year, I was here for that. And that was also a remarkable story, and he runs and he judges. Right. Did he see when he was a child also?
I don't know.
I was asking what they were born.
I know when I used
think
to
he
testify,
did.
He was a,
I don't remember.
A defense attorney.
Oh, he was, this guy also. Same way. So Izalitsky also, similar to Rabbi Bernstein, to Dr. Bernstein, Judge Bernstein, was he a doctor?
He's a judge.
Just judge. So he also, Isaac Litsky, clerked for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, also in his blindness, which is pretty remarkable. That was one of the goals he wanted to do, to show that he could do it, but not because he wanted to be a lawyer, because he ended up going into construction anyway, but he wanted to prove it himself. Anyway, fascinating story. But that's what I think of when I think of Al Tichachom B'Enecha. Don't be so smart with your eyes. Don't think you're so smart with just what you see. Yiras Hashem v'sor meira, staying away from the evil. And then the pasuk says, if you go back to source number 10, pasuk Ches, Rifus tihi l'sharecha v'shikoy la'atzmosecha. How exactly to translate that is not very easy, but it will generally it means it will be a healing to your stomach, to your navel, to your belly button, right? It will be healing for your belly button, for your navel. Vishikoy la'atzmosecha, and it will be an antidote to your bones. Shikoy, how does the Art Scroll translate shikoy, Ron? In Pasuk Ches, in 8.
8?
Yeah.
It will be health to your navel and marrow to your bones.
Marrow, they say marrow. Okay, there are other people that say it means tonic, like some kind of medicine. For your bones, meaning that it's not just sor meira. Right? We said before that if you're humble in your knowledge, that you're not willing, that you're not too confident. So then we say you'll be able to refrain from sinning. But the next passage says it's not just going to be sinning. It's also going to give you good things. What does that mean? It's going to give you good things. It's going to be like healing in your navel. like when you were a little baby and that's how you got your sustenance. It will provide sustenance for you, just like when you were in the womb, you got sustenance through your navel, and similarly, it will be good for your health, good for your body. The Malbim explains, Riflus v'gam shechukei ha-chachma misnagdim l'tivacha. Maybe you would think that being a moral person, listening to what Hashem tells you to do, is the opposite of what your natural inclination is. So maybe you would think that's not a good thing. Maybe you would think that when you follow Hashem's word, it's going to be bad for you, because it's clearly going against your nature. Maybe you think Hashem tells you to not eat certain things, to stay away from certain things, and therefore you're not going to get the right nutrients and things like that. Rifus tilisharecha. Don't think that the laws of Hashem, the different mitzvos, are actually going to help you and heal you, give you the sustenance that you shasharer shehu yikabel mashkim amazon lo levad shlo yechle. It's not just that you're not going to be sick. Ki azharas haTorah fishas amazon amuzu yehalacha lo refuah lechalyo. It's also going to heal you. V'chein baal tachshu shayde minei aprishas shebo b'torah. And also don't think that from refraining from the different things that Hashem tells you, min ha'onek v'atayva yisyave shmach hatzmosecha. Maybe you would think that it's going to drain your bone. It's going to take away the marrow. Ki behefech sheyu mishikoi latzmosecha. By following what Hashem wants from life, you're going to actually give yourself more health. Most of those things that Hashem tells you not to do, Hashem tells you not to eat, are actually harmful for your body. There are always the different studies that say one thing or the other. I'm not an expert in those things, so I couldn't tell you one way or the other. The next pasuk, I skipped to 16, 15 comes after. Kabedes Hashem mehoncha umereshis kol tvosecha. You should honor Hashem from your wealth and from the first of your produce. This harkens back to none other than Cain and Hevel from the Asuk's Parsha. Hevel brought me bechoros sono from the best of his flock, and Cain just brought from some of the vegetation in his field, not his best. So this is what it says, honor Hashem from your wealth and from the beginnings of your produce, meaning the best of your produce, the foremost of your produce. Says the Gemara in Bava Metzia in source number 15, Itzra Sachadayt Dechamina Ho of the Hukash Kibudav Ve'em Lechvodo Shel Makom Shnem Arkan Kaveis Havich Ve'asimecha. On the one hand it says, honor your father and your mother. V'nem Ar Lahala, and in Mishle it says in Arpasa Kaveis Hashem Mehoncha, that you should also honor Hashem. Maybe you would think that your parents could outweigh Hashem, right? You have to honor both of them. So here it's a tie, so I can listen to whoever I want. So says the Gemara there is no kamashwan delolish male. If the really pasuk in Tetzave, maybe, I don't remember, that says es shab sosai tishmeru v'es mosai es kavid tzivich v'asimecha. The two psukim are connected to each other, right? Honoring your father and your mother, and then it says, keep my Shabbos. So the Gemara says, that means that if your parents tell you to violate Shabbos, you don't listen. So why would you think that you need the parents that you need a pasuk to tell you that? Because of our pasuk. Because the pasuk says, just like you honor your parents, you honor Hashem, and if it's a tie, so maybe you can listen to whoever you want, says the pasuk in the Torah, no, you have to listen to Hashem first and foremost. Rashi says that this word, mehoncha, which literally means wealth, could actually be understood to mean two different words. Mikol masha chananecha, meaning from all the things that Hashem gave you. Afil mikol arev, even from your sweet voice. What does that mean? If you have a good voice, use it for Hashem. Right? Kabedes Hashem mehoncha, from the wealth that Hashem gave you, not just in terms of giving tzedakah, not just in terms of the success that Hashem gave you in your business, but everything Hashem gave you, you should return it back to Hashem. And this, I'm not sure if it's Nishmas is a pasuk. The Siddur tells us, On Shabbos morning, we read Nishmas Kol Chai before we go into Shulchan Ad after Az Yashir, and in the middle it says Ad Heina Azarinu Rachamecha. All of this, Hashem, you've given me through your mercy. V'lo Azavunu Chasadecha, and you haven't left, you haven't betrayed your kindness. V'yalti Chenu Hashem Lakein LaNetzach. Don't betray us forever. Al Kain. Therefore, Evarim Shepilak Debana Banu. The limbs that you gave us, that you doled out to us. And the spirit and the soul that you breathed into us, last week's parsha also, and the tongue that you put in our mouths, those are the exact things we're going to in turn give back to you and use to praise you, to bless you, to give over your splendor, to exalt you, in order to crown you as the king of the world. The parable that I like to say is I get from, it was a live concert from Avram Fried. Avram Fried has a song, Ad Hena. Anyone know the song, Ad Hena? One of my favorite songs, like ever. So if you don't know it, you should look it up. Ad Hena from Avram Fried. It's a beautiful song. And before he sings the song, he introduces with the following parable. He says that one day, the king is walking in the forest, and he needs to stop for a meal. But there's not going to be an inn for a very long time. And he sees this little cottage. He sees this little hut. And he goes into this little house and he says to the guy, I need a meal. And the guy says, I'm sorry, but we don't have much, but I can give you what we have. So the king says, oh, thank you very much. I don't have much with me because I'm traveling, but I do have some cutlery, I have some plates, I have some cups that you could use for our meal, and then I'll let you keep them. And the guy says, okay, good, because our plates aren't so great, and it's not very, coveted to give you paper plates and stuff like that. So then the king goes on his way, and a little bit later, a few months pass by, and the king comes back again. And the guy sees the king coming back and says, oh, no, I didn't learn from before. I didn't keep a stocked fridge. I didn't, put in my pantry. What am I going to give the king? He's a king. He's used to these big, lavish meals last time I got away because I didn't expect him. But now, I should have known better. I should have got some. What can I give to the king that he'll feel that this meal is fit for a king? So then he remembered. The king gave me his own royal plates. He gave me his own royal cutlery, his own royal cups. At the very least, I can give him a royal feast with his royal plates. Says Avram Fried, quoting probably from somebody else who he didn't quote, that this is what we're saying, Ad Hina. Hashem, we don't have much. There's nothing we can give you in return that's going to be on the level of your royalty. But at the very least, we can give you what you gave us. At the very least, we can give you your own royal limbs, your own royal tongue, what you gave us, which is imbued with your own kedusha, with your own holiness, that we can give back to you. And that's the best we can do. So that's what we say in Nishmas, but that's also what the pasuk means here. Kabedes Hashem Mehoncha. That could be it, but we're not going to play it right now.
Okay.
that you should honor Hashem from your wealth, meaning from what Hashem gives you. Make sure you're giving it back to Him. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us that the transition also carries over to the next pasuk. The next pasuk in source number 16, as you see, is V'imalu asamecha sava v'siro shikavecha yifrotsu, and your storage houses will be satisfied, and your barrels will be overflowing with wine. Right? When you give back to Hashem, you give, Rashi says, Reishis kol tuvos achamin, giving meiser and truma. You give tzedakah. You give back from what Hashem gives you to the people that Hashem tells you to give it to. So then Hashem will reward you. V'yimalu asamecha sava, you will then get your storehouses full. So Gemara and Shabbos tells us a famous line. We read this pasuk also over Yantif. Ba'minei Rebbe m'Rebbe Yishmael. Rebbe Yehuda Nasi says to Rebbe Yishmael, b'Rebbe, the son of Rebbe Yossi. Ashirim shebe'eretz Yisrael b'mahin zochen. Why are the wealthy people in Eretz Yisrael, what did they merit? How did they merit to have such wealth? Amar lei b'shvil shem asrin. Because they gave meiser. Because the pasuk tells us, shne'amar aser ta aser. You should give a tenth of your wealth. Aser b'shvil shetis asher. What does it mean? Aser t'aser, the double word. You give meiser so that Hashem will give you wealth. Aser b'shvil shetit asher. They give honor and respect to the Torah. That's why the people in Bavel are also wealthy. But that's what these pasukim mean. When you give of your own wealth that Hashem gave you, that you give maaser, you give truma, you give tzedakah to people like Hashem wants, so then Hashem will reward you. Hashem will reward you in providing for you more, so that because He knows you're going to do the right thing with it. When He gives wealth to people and they don't do the right thing, so that could lead to them getting it taken away. But when it comes to kaveres Hashem mehoncha, we give back what Hashem gives us. That's the entirety of the whole purpose of life that Hashem gives us, so that we can use those things properly. I'll just end off with a story that I once heard from a camp counselor that it was about a fellow camper of mine, another colleague, but it's not true. He must have just been saying that in order to add to the drama of it, because it's an old story, even before Hasidus. People say it's from the Baal Shem Tov, it's even before the Baal Shem Tov. Story goes like this. There was a little boy. When I heard it, the little boy's name was Benny. Back when it started, I'm sure it wasn't Benny. But a little boy named Benny, his grandfather owned a bagel shop. People know the story. Owned a bagel shop. Maybe I haven't said enough of it yet. So he owns a bagel shop, and he goes to his grandfather and says, "Hey, can I help out around the store? I want to spend time with you, etc." So he helps out, he cleans, he works behind the counter, but he doesn't take any money. He's the grandson. But the grandfather says, "I want to give you some, you know, to make sure that you understand that when you work, you get rewarded, you get stuff. So here's a bag of bagels. Here's some bagels." The other ones are going to go off also. "Here are a bag of bagels for all of the work that you do for me." It's not even 9 o'clock. Maybe it is. "Here's a bag of bagels for everything that you do for me." So he takes the bag of bagels, but he knew that when it comes to the store, his grandfather always had the same line, right? When someone would come and get bagels, the customer would always say, "Thank you for the bagels," and the grandfather would always say, "Don't thank me, thank Hashem. Hashem is the one that gave us the bagels." Okay, so the grandson takes the bagels from his grandfather and he says, "Oh, well, if we're supposed to thank Hashem, so then I'll give Hashem the bagels." So he goes over to the local shul, he opens the Aron Kodesh, and he puts the bagels inside the Aron. Now you know the story. Some people know the story. Next day in shul, he's waiting with bated breath to see at B'Vayhi Ben Tzo Aron if Hashem took his bagels. The Aron, the Peruchos, opens, and lo and behold, the bagels are gone. The bagels are gone. And the kid is so excited. And the kid is so excited that he continues to do this. Every Friday, the grandfather would give him bagels. He'd run over to the Aron and put the bagels in there. And the grandfather, after a few times of this happening, got a little suspicious. He never saw the bagels. He never saw when he ate over at the kid's house. He never saw the bagels anywhere. What was the kid doing with the bagels? So one day, he gives him the bagels. The kid runs out of the store, off to the shul, and the grandfather follows after him. And he follows after him, and he's going to the shul, and he goes to the shul, and he finally sees the kid, and he's hiding in the back while the kid goes up to Aron Kodesh. He opens Aron Kodesh, he puts the bagels in, he says, "Thank you, Hashem, for the bagels. Here, I want to reward you for everything you give us. Here you go, here are your bagels." And he closes the peruchas, and then the grandfather is in the back. And he can't believe what the kid is doing. So what are you doing? Giving the bagels to Hashem? That's not how Hashem works. You understand that Hashem doesn't have a body, he doesn't eat bagels. It's very nice that you want to give back to Hashem, but that's not, you know, that's not. And all of a sudden, as he's explaining to the kid, he hears a noise. They both hear a noise. They both duck behind the pew. And they find another guy comes into the shul. And the guy has, he's all disheveled, and he doesn't have nice clothing on. And he comes to the Aron. He opens the Aron, and he says, "Hashem, thank you so much again for the bagels. I know I can always count on you for my sustenance, but I want you to know that today I was offered a job. I'm not going to need your bagels anymore." And the guy walks out, and the grandson starts to cry. The grandson starts to cry. He thought Hashem was taking his bagels every week. And the grandfather says back to the kid, "You don't have to cry. That's how Hashem takes your thank you. Because what Hashem wants is that we take the sustenance that He gives us, and we give it out to other people." So the grandfather taught the kid, that's how we say thank you to Hashem. When we get stuff from Hashem, we give it out to others, and we make sure that what we're getting from Hashem is going to the right places, and thereby we will continue to get our own blessings, we'll continue to get our wealth, because Hashem knows that we're doing the right things with it. Okay, so that's Mishle Gimel, Hei through Yud. Join me next week for for some more well-known psukim of Mishlei and Shlomo HaMelech. Shkaya. Have a good week.